Hello, everybody. I want to invite you to turn to the book of John, chapter 11. If you don't have a Bible, I'd highly recommend grabbing one to follow along. And, it's been just a really brutal week. And so we had a bunch of stuff. I had a teaching planned for today, and oh, was it good. But we scrapped all that due to some events in the midst of our community, which we're going to take some family time tonight and talk about. And so we sensed I'm going to talk for a little bit, and then we're just going to spend some time singing and meditating and reflecting and trusting that God has something God wants to do tonight. I don't know how many of you have read the paper or CNN or news or all that, or have picked up on something going on, but I want to bring you up to speed in case you haven't, and then kind of walk you through its connection with our community, and then just spend some time reflecting on what this does to us and then how we can respond. I first met the Marindette family 8 years ago. And at the time, their two sons, Eric and Alex, were like that 11, 13, 10, 12 age, kind of that pre-mid pubescent age. Good boys, etc. And then saw them around. The boys essentially grew up around here in Mars Hill. And then started hearing a couple years ago about Eric, the 21-year-old, and that he had been in this community and he had been sitting in a gray chair like you and had been growing and changing and just became passionate about changing the world. And had been at Air Force Academy and had taken a leave from Air Force Academy because he wanted to go work with one of our global partners. At Mars Hill, we have brothers from other mothers and sisters from different misters all over the world who are doing fascinating work, many that we support with financially and with people and such. And so we've been pouring a lot of energy and sweat into North Africa. And so Eric said, 21 years old, I want to go live in North Africa and work with refugees and work with bringing humanitarian aid, and I want to go do something there. And so he left here and moved there and has been working for a while and then came back. And he and his brother, 19 years old, Alex, Eric and Alex decided, as they became more and more aware of the AIDS pandemic in Africa and our Mars Hill involvement, essentially all over Africa, trying to figure out what can we do to battle and help prevent and end the AIDS. He and his brother decided, let's do this. Let's get motorcycles and let's start at the very southern tip of Africa, at the very bottom in the Cape of South Africa, and let's ride our motorcycles all the way through the continent of Africa and end up in Egypt. And along the way, let's stop at all the Mars Hill partners places, and let's serve, let's volunteer, let's build stuff, let's hold orphans, let's encourage everybody we meet along the way. So it's like typically, that's what you're going to do next spring break, but not this one. And so, these guys are really, really passionate about changing the world. So I've been keeping in with their trip and keeping up with the stuff they're doing. At one point, even before the trip, Eric sent me this picture, and he's out in a field in the midst of all, in North Africa, in the midst of all these refugees. And he is just white boy in the midst of this whole thing. And he says, Rob, he's typing me this email, they keep asking me why I risk my life to serve them like this. And they eventually said, would you just tell us why you do this? So he says, the picture is me giving my first sermon, which I've never done and I have no idea what I'm doing. But they wanted to know what it is within me that would drive me to do this. So I emailed back, and like, you are my hero, dude. So I've just been tracking this. So many of us who are in this community and who are connected with Eric and Alex have been following their journey and getting reports and pictures of all the people they've been meeting along the way. You imagine you're somewhere in the middle of Africa, and you used to sit here on Sunday nights, but now you're all alone in the middle of Africa working with a group of AIDS orphans or something, and these two guys show up on motorcycles with a friend of theirs and are like, how can we help? We just are here to encourage you and love you on behalf of the Mars Hill family. This is what they've been doing for the past several months. Well, they made it to Cairo and met up with some friends, a friend Mike and a friend Chris. And Thursday, they were in a market when a terrorist set off a bomb. And Alex took the brunt of the bomb, and it killed him. And Eric was severely wounded and is in stable condition right now. And Mike and Chris were both severely wounded. I got the news Friday. Their parents, Rick and Teresa, got the news late Thursday night. And so as we got the news, the whole community here was just like, oh, good God, how are we going to make it through this? It just so happens that we had a whole team of Mars Hill people who were headed to Cairo this weekend. A coincidence. And so Keith Sparzak, one of our pastors, was able to bump his flight up and get on the flight with Eric and Alex's parents. And then our beloved Joe Hayes, student ministries pastor, happened to be in Spain. So he jumped on a plane, and sometime a couple hours ago, apparently, he got there. And then we have a sister church in Cairo. And these people are love machines. And they immediately started going behind the scenes at the hospital to make sure everything was going on. And we were told that when Eric and Alex's parents arrived at the airport at 4 a.m., there was a contingent of people from our sister church waiting for them to help them through everything. I want to show you a picture of Eric and Alex. So as we speak, Alex on the left, Eric on the right. Eric is in a hospital bed in Cairo, grieving the death of his brother. And when we started Mars Hill, we intentionally set out to go to the most dangerous places in the world. We did detailed studies of where has the Church of Jesus not gone. And so we intentionally set out to go to the most church-forsaken places. We intentionally set out to take the love of Christ into the most dangerous places because we believe that's what Jesus would have us do. But we didn't know it would cost this. So tonight, I want to talk about weeping. I want to talk about grieving. And I want to talk about what to do when you feel like your heart is just going to cave in. In my brief gig as a pastor, because I'm so old and wise, I've learned that you're never prepared for that phone call. I got a phone call Friday morning. It was like, Alex died and Eric barely made it. He's in critical condition. I don't care who you are, you're never prepared. It always comes out of nowhere. A friend of mine was killed in a car accident a couple months ago. I remember to this day where I was sitting, how the phone felt, how the chair, everything about it. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. You got the call. Maybe it was last week or maybe it was, you know, 20 years ago. You know what it's like. A woman last Sunday right down here said, Rob, I was just diagnosed this week with cancer. It always comes out of nowhere. I've also learned in my brief years dealing with this kind of thing that whatever you're feeling, it's okay. Anger, it's okay. Shock, it's okay. Rage, it's okay. Just that kind of numb, floaty feeling, it's okay. And some people don't feel anything at all and feel bad because they don't feel like they're supposed to feel this, but they don't. And that's okay too. And sometimes there's this sense, especially in religious communities, that you're supposed to be like, hey, God's in control, we're going to make it, and just quote a popular Christian song or something, or even maybe even a Bible verse or two, but sometimes it doesn't help, because sometimes there's all these natural emotions that we're feeling. I've also learned that some things are unresolved. Some things just are. Some things just are. Maybe you lost somebody. Maybe you went through some horrible tragedy, some disease, and it's just unresolved. And no amount of explanations or intellectual whatever is going to fix the fact that it just is. And some things are painful and random and evil and brutal and they make no sense and they just are. And right now we can't resolve them. We just have to let them be. Now, there's a story I've been brewing on since a friend of mine actually died a couple months ago, and I've been doing all sorts of thinking and meditating on it, and then over the events of this past week, all these things I've been thinking about just like leap to the forefront of my mind and heart. John chapter 11, this is something in the life of Jesus. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And this Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." Now, later on, Lazarus dies. And so Jesus goes to visit his sisters after his death. Verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Mary, to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Now, the question is, obviously, why does the one stay in the house and why does the one go home? Well, there's an ancient Jewish practice that's going on here. It's really, really old practice, but I think it's happening right here. Now, it's called sitting Shiva, and you have to say that carefully. Sitting Shiva. Now, what would happen when you lost a loved one? Your friend loses a loved one. Is for 7 days, which is where the word Shiva comes from, seven in the Hebrew language. For 7 days, they would do no work and they would sit in their home. And you would come and visit them. Maybe come in the living room, the floor, whatever. And you would sit around your friend. So you have your friend who lost a loved one. And you would come and sit in the presence of your friend, but not say anything. You don't have to say anything. Just come and sit. Because some pain, there just aren't words for. There just aren't words for. How many of you have been in a situation where you're trying to think of what to say to the person, and everything you say, you're like, I can't believe I just said that. My words are not helping. Yes, three of you are honest tonight. We'll deal with that in a little while. Yeah, and so what you do is you just sit in sitting Shiva, is you would just sit. And if this person wants to talk, then they would talk and you can converse. But they just might want to sit. So sitting Shiva is a way of just saying to this person, I love you, I'm here for you, I am flesh and blood present in this journey with you. And if you want to talk, great. But I want with my presence to let you know that you are not alone. So you might sit for hours. You might sit for days with the person. And that's okay. It's okay. You're just letting them know that you're there with them and for them. And you're in it together. So what you have with Mary and Martha is you have people coming from all over to sit Shiva with them over their death of their brother. Jesus shows up on the scene. And verse 21, Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. The technical term for that is guilt trip. And verse 22, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she told him. I believe you're the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. And then they all eventually end up at the tomb. Verse 32, when Mary, the other sister, reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And Jesus said, I've heard that somewhere. Verse 33, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Let me read 35 again because it's a long one. Jesus wept. Now, if you happen to have grown up around church, this was Memory Verse Sunday right here. Jesus wept right away. Gold star, I'm on my way. Jesus wept. It's the philosopher Dallas Willard that says, and he says that familiarity can breed unfamiliarity. And what happens sometimes is things that we've heard that we might be familiar with when we have caught somewhere, Jesus wept, become so familiar that we lose the depth and the edge that they have to them. Jesus wept. Now, if we were to read on, we would discover that Jesus is eventually going to raise Lazarus from the dead. So Jesus apparently has read ahead in the story. He knows where this whole thing is headed. And yet he still weeps. He's going to raise him. I mean, he knows. He could just be like, oh, okay, enough. Here, come on out, dude. Mm-mm. He weeps. His power does not rule out his grief. His ability to raise the dead does not rule out his sorrow and pain and the aching in his heart. He's going to raise Lazarus from the dead if you read the rest of the story, and yet he weeps. You can have great faith and still weep. In fact, if you work through the scriptures, the people that seem to be held up as having the most faith in God and seem to have had the greatest connection with God often seem to be the people who go through the most Kleenex. It's fascinating that spiritual maturity and being alive to God seems to go hand in hand with great sorrow and grieving and tears. One writer, David, even just says, like, I flood my couch with tears. And later says, this man is a man after God's own heart. Jesus' power, his like dominion over death and illness, doesn't rule out his profound sorrow and ache and grief. Jesus, great power, does not rule out great grief. Secondly, Jesus feels it full on. He feels the full weight of the moment. You have Mary and Martha, you have friends and family, you have people who have made the journey from Jerusalem. They're all surrounding. They've been sitting Shiva, they're grieving, they're mourning, some perhaps in sackcloth and ashes, reciting Jewish prayers for the dead. I mean, you have this just giant, brutal scene of pain and weeping and suffering. And in the middle of it, Jesus doesn't avoid it and numb it and escape and resort to religious platitudes. He just feels the full weight of it. He allows the full force of the moment to hit him. It's like, oh, and he weeps. Oh, look at this. Jesus wept. Another observation. Jesus spends no time speculating why. Why'd this happen? He spends no time giving long theological, intellectual explanations for this. He doesn't go into, well, you don't have to understand, we're all sinners and the whole world got spending it. No time speculating. I don't know why these guys that I love happen to be in this market on the other side of the world on a Thursday at the exact time as somebody carrying a bomb full of nails. I don't know. I don't know why they were the ones closest. I don't know. I know that evil runs rampant in our world. I know that there are things that are simply awful that God grieves over them. But I don't have nice, clean answers on why them. And I may never. And anybody who gives you nice, simple, Christian answers to deep, complex issues of evil and suffering, I would be very, very leery of. That would be very clear. You do not have Jesus spending time speculating on why. The best you get from him is, may God get the glory in this situation. The best you get from him is his pulling forward and saying, may people see how great God is through this. And so Jesus, in the midst of all this sorrow, weeps. Now, for me, there are all sorts of lessons. And tonight, I'm actually using notes. So some of you mark the occasion or get a picture or something. There's a couple of lessons as I've tried to wrestle with this passage and the pain in myself and those around us over Alex's death and Eric and Chris and Mike's injuries. What I think Jesus is teaching us is that if we don't let it out, then it's still in there. Jesus lets it out. Jesus wept. And it just kind of pours out. Two other places in the text, it talks about Him being deeply troubled in His spirit. He lets it out. And if you don't let it out, then it's still in there somewhere. It's possible to have gone through great loss 20 years ago and have not grieved it properly, and you're still carrying it around. Maybe you went through a divorce, a breakup, a betrayal, some sort of abuse. And maybe it was 10, 13, 15, 20, 40 years ago. If you don't let it out, then it's still in there somewhere. And you have Jesus totally connected with God, this God-man who's fully in tune. He's a fully integrated, healthy, whole person. He's fully alive, a fully human, fully divine being who is, He lets it out. He's so healthy, He just lets it out. And when you let it out, then it's no longer in there. If the Son of God needs a good cry, then so do I. If the Son of God needs a good cry, then so do I. That rhymes too, I think, so you're free to quote me on that. See, there are some of these weird perceptions out there. In some religious settings, there is the perception that weeping and mourning means that you're doubting God. And so when you lose something or something horrible happens, it's no, we have to trust. We have to trust that God's, and so people aren't allowed to express natural, healthy emotion. That's really, really, really sick and wrong and can mess people up for an entire lifetime. Are we tracking with that? It's really, really messed up. Jesus wept. And He knows, like, He's read the end of the, He's seen the end of the movie. He knows where this is headed. And He weeps. There's this twisted notion that somehow religious people or people who believe in God, to weep would be somehow doubt God's sovereignty or power or control or something. It's totally, totally messed up. Totally messed up. Second impulse that needs to be addressed, and this has not happened in West Michigan that I have ever seen, but I've heard about it happening in other parts of the country, is people, particularly men, who believe that it's not strong and manly to cry. This is the cult of macho, and it needs to be addressed. He's in that movie, in the scene towards the end, where they finally, the guy and girl get back together, and he's overcome with emotion, and he's just like, I got a popcorn kernel or something in my eye. It's strange. I don't really know how to explain what's happening. And this weird, twisted, totally not Jesus impulse that somehow if you are emotional or if you feel the weight of things or if you weep, then you are somehow strong. And that somehow that's the ideal. You have in Jesus somebody who has the power over life and death. You don't get much more powerful than that. You don't get much more strength than that. And Jesus wept. Maybe you grew up in some sort of home where showing emotion was seen as a sign of weakness or irrationality or instability or something. Being fully in tune and integrated as a person to where you understand your emotions and are connected with them and feel the full weight of things. This is what it means to be fully human and fully alive. And it's God's intentions for us. See what happens as we go through life, as we take hits. We get burned, betrayed. And so what happens is our ability to feel over time is like, wait. If this is what it's like to feel, I don't want to feel that again. Maybe it's in a relationship. Maybe it was in a marriage. Maybe it was a small group or house church and you got burned. And there's this thing like, if that's what it's like to commit to people, there's no way am I doing that again. And so we build this thick like wall around our heart. And so what happens is we have this thing that we build up and we say, I've been burned before and now I'm on my guard. I will not let that happen again. And so we cut down on our ability to feel. But what happens when we do that is the bandwidth gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And as we lose the ability to feel great emotion, we lose the ability to feel great pain. But on the other end, we lose the ability to feel great joy. And to be able to feel one, we have to be able to feel the other. And so what you have in Jesus is somebody who's fully alive and is fully able to feel great joy, which means at the same time he has the capacity to feel great pain. There's a great book by Dr. Brand and Philip Yancey, wrote it together, called Pain, The Gift Nobody Wants. And they argue from a physical perspective and work their way towards the spiritual dimension that when you feel pain, it's proof that you can still feel. Pain is our body's physical way of telling us that we still have nerves and we can still feel. And in the spiritual dimension, pain tells us that we're still alive. This is why Jesus feels things so deeply, because he's so alive. It's a much more painful way to live, but it means we're also then capable of the kinds of joys and highs that God made us for. Has your heart grown cold? Have you not grieved something properly? And has something within you died that needs to be brought back to life? Jesus wept. He feels the full force of things. I used to believe that when I went through change, that the strong people, that the people who really get it, were the people who could go through all kinds of change and be like, that was not a big deal. That was not a big deal. I'm cool. I can roll with that. That was not a big deal. And after a while, I realized that that was something sick and twisted in that. Because what happens is you and I go through change, which can be loss. And if we don't acknowledge it, it stays with us. Maybe that kid who was like this tall all of a sudden last year went away to school. They're 18 and they left the house. And you find yourself grieving. You find yourself grieving. That's healthy. That's healthy to realize things are not how they used to be. You had this group of roommates and you guys were really tight. But then this one moved away and this one went here. And now this year it's different. And it's not how it was. And when we're most fully alive is when we're attuned to these things and we properly grieve. Now, if like 9 years later you're sucking your thumb and holding your pillow in the corner because of a roommate, we got some other things to talk about, okay? So there's a little bit of, you know. But what happens is we go through changes. Maybe you moved here from some other town and maybe it was like from someplace that's warmer and so you need even more grieving. And you're like, no, I should be fine with this. Why am I not fine? I got a great setup here. Wait. No. Leaving a place can involve great loss. Or maybe it's like, I got this new job. And it's way better than that other job. And I'm not working with them. I'm working with them. And it's all, this is the job I wanted. And yet why? Well, it's because maybe there was a grieving process that had to go on when you left that. Life is not how it was. It's now this way. And it's okay to go through a grieving. Birthdays. I don't think I need to say anything more. I was going to say birthdays when you're older. But when your kid gets another year older, in the midst of that joy, there's like, they're not that age anymore. They're this age. And as you celebrate them growing another year, there's also within it, if we're really honest, that was my little dude, and now he smells. You know? What is that? Yeah. And if you're a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about. In the midst of this great joy, it can be tinged. It can be tinged with sorrow, because it's not how it was. And that's okay. And that's okay. Jesus wept. And what happens for us is we fly from transition to transition. Things change. I was living with them and those roommates, but then we all went here. And then we were in high school, but now we're in college. And so I'm trying to get everybody back together, but this person went off here and so-and-so's got a girlfriend and we never see him. And then this is over here. And now it's not how it was. And it's okay to simply grieve that and say it's not how it was. It's okay to grieve that. Are we tracking on this? Are we tracking? Otherwise, six of you are tracking with me. That's a beautiful thing. What happens is it catches up with us later. Because if we don't let it out, then it's still in there somewhere. And God made us to be fully alive. God made us to be fully alive. There's a fascinating thing that happens in the text. And I've missed it for years, and all of a sudden this week it leaped out at me. Notice verse 23. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Verse 24, Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day," which is actually a reference to Daniel, the book of Daniel, chapters 11 and 12. So she quotes this Bible verse and she's like, "Oh yes, I know that at the end of time, God's going to raise those who have died and God's going to fix it all. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with how the real big ending of the story goes. I'm cool with that." Verse 25, Jesus said to her, wait, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" Jesus says, he's going to rise. And she quotes this Bible verse and she's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, I know at the end of time God's going to restore everything. I know. Yeah, yeah, I know." And Jesus is like, no. I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about you trusting me and believing me right now. I'm not talking about death someday. I'm talking about life right now. Do you believe in me? Do you trust me? We're going to be okay? Do you believe me? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? He moves it from someday to here right now. Martha, I'm not talking about then. I'm talking about that, but I'm really talking about right now. I'm talking about, do you trust me? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you believe me? Do you believe me what I'm saying? Do you believe my way is the best? Do you trust me with life? Do you trust me with death? Do you trust me with the next 5 minutes? Do you trust me with the next day? Trust me with the next year? As I've reflected on this, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Do you trust me that we'll figure it out with Eric? We'll figure it out. We'll work through it. We'll work through what it was like for him to have his brother die in his presence. Do you trust? Do you believe me? Do you believe me? Do you believe me? Do you trust me that following Jesus wherever he takes you, no matter how dangerous, is still the best way to live? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Can you trust me with your dad who died a few years ago? Can you trust me with your aunt? Can you trust me with the cancer? Can you trust me with your worries? Can you trust me with your anxieties? Can you trust me with all your concerns? Can you trust me with the suicidal voices that keep telling you to end it? Do you believe this? Can you trust me? Can you trust me? This is what the risen Christ does to us. You gonna trust me? You gonna trust me, Rob, in a couple days when you and Eric hang out together and start working through what he's been through in the past week? You trust me that we'll get out the other side, okay? Do you trust me with the divorce? Do you trust me with the breakup? Do you trust me with the diagnosis? Do you trust me with your worries? Do you trust me with the grief of that person who died 30 years ago and you've never properly grieved it? And the risen Christ says to us, do you trust me? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Is there any way tonight the Spirit of God is simply pulling you and tugging you and calling you to be fully alive, calling you to grieve something, calling you to trust God with it, calling you to say, okay, here. Let's pray and then let's spend some time reflecting. If you want to come down front, talk with any of us, we'll be around. God, we're wrestling with a Jesus who can raise from the dead and he still weeps. We're wrestling with a Jesus who insists that we're forgiven and reconciled to you and just calls us to trust this. We're wrestling with how in a world with nail bombs you are on the throne. God, we're wrestling with how you can take somebody in the prime of life, totally devoted to you, and they're gone from us. We celebrate Alex's life and we mourn his death. We thank you that we don't grieve like those who have no hope, and yet we do grieve. We do grieve. Please tonight speak into each of us what we need to hear. We want to be fully alive. We want to feel the full weight of things. We want to enter fully into the moment. God, I specifically bring before you my brothers and sisters here tonight who have people, events, places, pain that they have not fully grieved. Now, as we meditate, as we sing, as we reflect, we ask you to drag up whatever it is. We ask you to show it to us so we can release it, so we can go through the painful process, so that we can be everything you made us to be. We trust that we're forgiven. We trust that shame and guilt have no place in this life. We trust that you've taken care of everything on the cross. And we trust this risen Christ to heal us. We thank you for hearing our prayers. And everybody said, let's just take some time to reflect. If you want to talk with somebody, a bunch of us will be down front. I was thinking, we ought to just pray specifically for Eric and his family, et cetera. Is that okay? So let's do that. God, we think of Eric right now, laying on a hospital bed, and we are one in praying for his healing and his heart. We think of his parents. We think of Rick and his wife Sue, and then we think of Teresa. And, we can't imagine their pain. We think of Keith Sparzak, one of our beloved pastors, who's right in the middle of all this. We think of Joe Hayes on a plane somewhere between Spain and North Africa. We think of our sister church and the many people working behind the scenes. And we are one in praying for something out of this. We're praying for your glory. We're praying for the redeeming of all this. We're praying that you'll heal us. And then tonight, God, we want this to be bigger than just them. We want this community to be the kind of community where we're entering into the healing that only you can bring. So please help us to drag up all of the junk and pain and darkness so that we can be free. Even tonight, God, as we drive home and go about our business, please continue to pursue us and speak to us and never let us go. Keep reminding us that your way is the best way. Help us to take these hearts that are rocks and stones and turn them into flesh. Make them soft. We want to be in tune with you. We want to be fully connected and dialed in. And so we need you. It's our confession that we're weak and we need your strength. And in Jesus' name, the whole church said, amen. Thanks. I don't think I have any tears left. I will sleep well tonight. May the peace of God rest upon you.